Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Flew Doucette back to face trial. Gary Ploche was waiting with a gun.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, part two on Miriam Rodriguez. I'm just so taken with this story that we're just going to jump right in. You guys know I love you, but I also love Miriam Rodriguez. Remember last week, we met target number two on Miriam's hit list, Cristiano, the scared kid who wanted his mom and was hungry and whom Miriam gave her lunch to and bought him a Coke. But he also seemed to not fully grasp or understand why so much violence was taking place. But this act of kindness by Miriam prompted him to give her and the investigator many dark details about the cartel, including the details of Karen's murder. He told them how the cartels operated, how seemingly innocent people were killed, even if they simply suspected that they could be involved with their rival, the Gulf Cartel. Or even if the kidnapped victim could possibly know the Gulf Cartel. You see, the Zetas would grab people off the highways, stopping them in their cars. If someone had weed, well, it was reasonable for them to kill them if they thought that maybe they purchased it from the rivals. They once killed a man just because he had a pistol in his truck. Cristiano even admitted that two women, and trigger warning here, one pregnant, were beheaded because once kidnapped, the Zetas suspected that they were romantically involved with their rival cartel. Some ruthless killings Cristiano witnessed or participated in, he said it was never really explained to him why the killings needed to take place from his higher-ups. With Karen, he said, they went through her phone and saw photos of her with armed men in her car, and even just the slight suspicion that those could be the rival Gulf Cartel warranted her killing after collecting her family's ransom money. One killing specifically that he didn't understand was that of Barbara, who was killed along with Karen. They were friends. Barbara was an older woman that Karen thought was really cool and had started to spend a lot of time with. And their friendship and Barbara's proximity to Karen and Karen's to her seems to be the only reason why both of them were killed, despite the fact that Barbara had let both Salma and Cristiano stay at her house and she would feed them. Because Barbara was a friend of the Zetas. Like I said, had taken both Salma and Cristiano in and fed them and cared for them on occasion. But for whatever reason, because the Zetas are so ruthless, she needed to die. And in this final episode on Miriam Rodriguez and her daughter Karen, this will not be the last time that no good deed went unpunished. Cristiano also revealed that the main guy of the Zetas, or one of the main guys, was a guy they called El Larry, and he was a leader in the cartel who looked like a schoolteacher and wore pressed shirts and drove with a truck that had a municipal symbol on the side of it, almost like he worked for the government. He was someone you would never suspect was a cartel leader. He also divulged that him and Salma were essentially the ransom collectors of the group. Cristiano then took Miriam to the ranch. This was her third visit to the ranch, the Basura, The first being the Marine raid of the ranch where a handful of Zetas were killed, along with two girls, Margarita and Jessica. Loved ones of the kidnapped, missing, or murdered become so desperate and vigilante that they roam the wide expanses of Mexico, setting out on their own for truth. Many traverse the rural outskirts of Mexico, digging up any area that seemed to have been disturbed by prior digging, looking for their loved ones' remains, just to maybe get the chance to sleep at night. Sleep riddled with nightmares that their loved ones had been murdered, but sleep finally, nonetheless. Desperation with the cartel violence, government corruption, and a sad lack of care for their plight made them wanderers in their own minds, wanderers in the search for the answer of what happened to their loved ones. In Miriam's case, she couldn't just wander. She needed a purpose, and she needed a plan. And along with tracking down her daughter's kidnappers and killers, Miriam also started a collective of 600 families of the missing and murdered that stood by her and who she then helped them petition the government for help. And Miriam knew more than just about anyone, even the police, about the criminal underworld of San Fernando. The police commander in San Fernando called her when he needed intelligence about the local Zeta operatives, what they did, who they were connected to, even where they lived. At one of these meetings of the family members of the missing, a woman showed up with a familiar story. She was there to get help, to get justice and restitution from the government for the murder of her sister, Margarita. And this incident would put Miriam in a moral fight with herself. This was the sister of Margarita, one of the girls killed on the ranch raid that Miriam was witness to. That Miriam had forced the Marines to take the two girls, Margarita and Jessica, into custody and then forced them to give up the location of the ranch after she'd seen the two girls typing away on a laptop Miriam recognized as her daughter Karen's. This was the sister of Margarita, the same girl who had confessed to the Marines that night on the Basura Ranch where Karen was murdered that they had helped kidnap and murder the women laying dead in plain sight on the ranch, and one of them pregnant, after their families couldn't put up the ransom money. At the time, though, Miriam still had not located Karen's remains, and while she felt that although two more lives being lost was tragic, it seemed more for a noble cause, a necessary evil that she didn't take part in but witnessed. But now, with Margarita's sister at her meeting begging for help, Miriam made a decision. On February 1st, 2015, the family of Margarita Rentinera enrolled in the state system for attention to victims, with Miriam's help. Miriam's mission still needed to continue, however. Her list was growing, with new intelligence she'd gathered by way of social media, meetings with unknowing family members of her daughter's murderers who gave up details freely while Miriam was under one of her disguises, leading Miriam to their capture. With Sama and Cristiano arrested, the names left on her list grew and changed as new information came in. Many names given by Cristiano, coupled with the hand that they had in Karen's kidnapping and murder, were gruesomely described by him. He gives up the name of the man that finally strangles Karen to death, or the two men, essentially. The woman, a beefy gal as she was described, I'm not trying to make a joke of this, but they actually use like a slang term in Spanish in Azama Med's book, but I can't remember it. I just remember thinking, oh, she's a beefy gal. But again, this isn't funny, but she essentially beats Karen up for fun in this whole thing. Their creative torture is just so horrific. But Miriam starts going down the list. The next one is the florist. You see, Miriam had known the florist as a child. She cared about him. And when she saw that he had dropped out of school when he was a kid to sell roses on the street, she would feel bad if her and her kids were eating out front of their cowboy apparel shop, and she would invite him to sit and eat with them. Imagine the feeling now knowing that that same boy, now man, kidnapped your daughter.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Karen was also incredibly kind to him. Karen turned heads. Men would flag her truck down in the town square just to stop and talk to her or buy her flowers from the street vendors. And one of those vendors was the florist, a man she had known since she was a kid, and a man that went in and out of the Zetas cartel. Breaking Bad for street vendor work and then going back into the criminal underworld, one in which he claims to have been forced into. But like her mom, Karen had a soft spot herself for people less fortunate. She was the youngest of three siblings, and by the time Karen was old enough to have childhood memories, her parents seemed to have been thriving, a stark contrast to her older siblings' memories of their parents' struggles and lean times. So to them, Karen seemed spoiled, but she was not. She felt like she could be of help to others. So even if there weren't men buying her flowers on the street, the fair-skinned blonde, La Guerra, as the Zetas nicknamed her, which essentially means white girl. And by the way, guys, I'm doing my best rolling my R's. I hope you're impressed with me. But this, you know, it's sometimes hard to say words. But La Guerra, Guerra, I might have gotten it wrong this time. Damn it. Essentially means white girl. It's like a slang Chicano Mexican term. Please tell me if I'm wrong or just leave me alone because now I'm embarrassed. Okay. But even if she wasn't being offered flowers, she would still see the florist on the street, and she would always stop and give him a buck or two. Miriam's memory of her kindness to the florist, coupled with her daughter's kindness, stuck with her when she was pursuing him. But the florist was not as flashy as the other Zetas, who would post photos online in seedy hotels with piles of drugs and automatic weapons, which is frankly extremely stupid. And the florist might have been a little bit smarter. He chose to stay under the radar. But she was able to find one photo, a social media post of the florist, dressed in a cowboy shirt, drinking a beer with two other men. She recognized him, and then she got tips from some of his family members that he had gone back to selling goods at the border. This time, selling CDs, not flowers. But Miriam still recognized him. However, because she had already caught up with Sama, Cristiano, and other members like El Flaco, Mario, Chepo, her now distinct short, bright red hair that was originally a disguise became a beacon. And before she got to him, he spotted her. The narrow footpath and a woman with bright red hair your buddies had told you about made it easy for the florist to spot Miriam, who had her hands tucked in her pockets, gripping her gun. He fled, and Miriam, in broad daylight, pulled out her gun and began to chase him. This is a 54-year-old woman at this time, maybe 55, I don't know, but let's just say middle-aged woman at this time. But luckily for Miriam, had this happened prior to 2006, she wouldn't have been able to maneuver and catch him as easily. she was able to move more freely than she would have been back in 2006 had this happened then, because she had gastric bypass surgery. At that time, she weighed over 350 pounds, but now, a lean 135, 54-something years old, she was faster and quicker and more agile than her 30-year-old self, so she had him. She said to him, "If you move, I'll fucking shoot you," as she grabbed him by the shirt and shoved her pistol to his back. She tackled him to the ground and then held him for over an hour until the authorities came. With the traffic at the International Bridge, the authorities took forever to get there. But she was able to hold him. And then in one of the, I guess, more lighthearted, I guess, kind of hilarious accounts of this story, which much of it is just absolutely horrible. But after apprehending the florist in front of a crowd at the Mexico-Texas border, Miriam, literally hours later, attends a family and friends barbecue, where she recounts a lot of her stories, to which some of the people there said they'd rather not know the details because it's too dangerous. And then some, more concerned, ask her, "When is enough going to be enough? This is too dangerous for you." But for Miriam, it wasn't enough yet. She had more on her list, and she didn't care if she would die trying to apprehend every person that harmed her daughter. She's really just a goddamn badass. I mean, she's not killing these men. She's making sure they pay their debt to her daughter and to society for what they've done. But she's also showing tough mom energy while also showing compassion at certain points. I mean, it's truly incredible. So at this point, she had gathered most of the men involved, and in total, at the end of her mission, she would have apprehended or helped apprehend 10 cartel members involved in her daughter's murder. But still, when asked when she'd rest, when she'd be satisfied, according to "Fear is Just a Word" by Azam Ahmed, she responded, "Not yet. I've still got those bitches to find." Miriam wasn't necessarily known for, you know, having a lady's tongue. She was brash. She cussed a lot. And, I mean, she's a girl after my own heart. But those bitches were girls that had taken part in the kidnapping and torture of her daughter, and who also proved harder to track down than the men. Miriam often relived the days after Karen's disappearance. She would drive around town, kind of half-crazed, and when she'd see one of these bitches sitting at a plastic table at a carne asada restaurant, acting suspicious, she had confirmed her suspicions that the girl had been monitoring the road to the Basura for the Zetas when she reviewed the GPS coordinates of the calls made regarding Karen's ransom. They came from that girl's grandmother's house. This is Elvia Betancourt. It's been reported that it was a barbecue restaurant, but barbecue, carne asada, whatever. Elvia Betancourt, the young girl Miriam had taken pity on and given Karen's clothes when she was a kid. The one Miriam realized was involved after eating at the restaurant. Elvia, now dating a high-ranking member of the Zetas involved in Karen's kidnapping and murder, who was staking watch out on the Basura Ranch from that restaurant, the same restaurant Miriam had eaten at 2 days after Karen's kidnapping, was within eyeshot of the ranch. Miriam put two and two together. Elvia was watching over the ranch for her boyfriend and his cronies. Miriam then tracked down Elvia's boyfriend, a Zeta who was in a prison for a different crime. Miriam then waited outside the prison for the day that Elvia would visit, and she did. When Miriam spotted her, she called the police and Elvia was arrested. Next on the list was the born-again Christian. Miriam had tricked his grandmother into giving up his whereabouts, and those whereabouts were his new life as a follower of God. You see, El Kike, I might not be saying that name right, but I'm giving up on trying, was attending an evangelical church when Miriam tracked him down. It was November 14th, 2016, 2 years into her 3-year hunt for her daughter's killers. She entered the church and she knew right away it was him. When the cops handcuffed El Quique, the minister asked Miriam whether she had no mercy. She stopped and stared at the man and said, quote, "And where was his mercy when they killed my daughter?" Then, on March 22nd, 2017, 3 years into her fight for her daughter's justice, around midnight, 29 inmates dug a tunnel and escaped a prison in Ciudad Victoria. Many of those were Zetas, and some were people on Miriam's hit list that she had put in prison. Miriam, at this point, was worried for her safety, even despite the fact that one of Karen's murderers that Miriam had put behind bars had been recaptured. But she begged the government for extra security and protection. They promised to send police patrol cars to her home and place of business, but she was still nervous about the prison break, but also undeterred in her search for her daughter's killers. She pressed on. She wasn't afraid to die. She said she died the day her daughter was killed, and so she didn't care if they killed her. She was going to push on.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
And one of the last people that she follows and tries to avenge her daughter's death happens to be a woman involved in the cartel who is no longer apparently living a life of crime, maybe trying to be on the right side, but she's a nanny in Ciudad Victoria. And Miriam stalks her and waits, wearing out her car battery, listening to the radio to keep herself awake while she waits and waits, trying to stay warm. At certain points, her son Luis would have to come and jump her car secretly and quietly as he lived in Ciudad Victoria, as she waited for the right time. According to Azam Ahmed's book, it was 3 a.m., and Miriam had been sitting and listening to the radio for several hours when her car battery died. Stuck, she decided to call her son Luis. He pulled up with his headlights turned off, and he and Miriam watched the house where Soto was working, praying none of the lights came on as they connected the jumper cables. When dawn broke over the neighborhood, Miriam phoned the police to bring units to the address. As Laguerre Soto exited the house onto the street, Miriam leaped from her car and gave chase, screaming for the police to follow her. She yanked Laguerre Soto to the ground by her hair, falling herself in the process and fracturing her foot. And this injury would perhaps be part of Mrs. Rodriguez's demise. But meanwhile, Miriam presses the forensics team who were with her on one of her three visits to the ranch to test the remains found near the tractor, as they had previously stated none belonged to Karen. But she sticks with it for a full year. And finally, they confirm bone fragments belonging to Karen, specifically a femur, were discovered. And then more of Karen's remains are eventually found, and Miriam is able to bring her daughter home and give her a proper burial. But then on May 10th, when Mexico celebrates Mother's Day, and also about a month after she grabbed that girl involved in her daughter's killing by the hair, tackled her to the ground, and fractured her foot. Miriam's bravery finally caught up to her. She was now 57 at this point, struggling on crutches towards her house, when a white Nissan, driven by some of the Zeta cartel, pulled up in front of her house, and they shot Miriam about a dozen times, and then drove off. Her husband found her sprawled in the driveway, her hand in her purse, where she kept her pistol. Miriam Rodriguez's death enraged people across the state. The governor, Francisco Javier Garcia, wrote on Twitter, "The government of Tamaulipas will not allow the death of Miriam Rodriguez to turn into yet another statistic." The police were inspired by her bravery and tenacity, and they hunted down the hitmen involved in Miriam's killing. Then, in June of that year, nearly a month after Mrs. Rodriguez's death, officials in the state of Veracruz, acting with information she had provided, arrested yet another suspect in Karen's case. The woman had beaten and tortured Karen during the kidnapping, hanging her up like a boxing bag and punching her. After that, the woman fled to Veracruz, where she drove a taxi while raising her young son, according to Azam Ahmed's book. But even in death, Mrs. Rodriguez had found her. From the beyond, Miriam captured her final person on the hit list, not only getting justice for Karen, but hopefully resting a little easier, knowing that her determination for her daughter's legacy trickled down into her own. And today she lays to rest next to her daughter Karen under cypress trees, a mother and daughter together in peace. And Miriam is not only remembered for her bravery and tenacity, she's also commemorated with a bronze plaque in San Fernando's town square. But she's also a symbol of apparent determination to take care of their babies. My God, that woman, Miriam Rodriguez, is so inspiring. I like that she cusses like a sailor and was just so determined, but so kind and compassionate at certain points. There's no way that I wouldn't do the same thing if this happened to my kid. Frankly, if this happened to my dog, I might do it. You know, I mean, I definitely would. I love Blue. But I don't know. There's a lot of stories of parents who kind of take justice in their own hands. I mean, Miriam did it, I would say, like, very, you know, by the book, but not by the book, because she also pulled out a pistol in a crowd at the Mexico-Texas border. It also, as a middle-aged woman, just like, she's in her late 50s at this point, and she's literally pulling out a pistol, freaking out the patrons, and just like, nope, you ain't gonna mess with my kid. But there's a lot of stories of parents like that. I remember one that my mom had told me about. I think it maybe happened in the 80s, and I looked it up for this episode, and I want to play a clip from the actual audio of what happened at the airport. But there was a dad, and again, I'm not advocating for killing people who harm your kids, but I'm not saying, you know, it's, you know, vigilante justice is a very confusing abstract thing, and I don't know where I lie on it, but I just find the stories fascinating and heartbreaking and kind of cool. They're like the real life Liam Neeson from Taken. So this guy, his name was Gary Plache. I don't know if I'm saying that right. This is a different genre of language that I think I got the Spanish language down okay. This, don't expect me to get this right. Is this French? Plache. Plache. Planche. I don't know. So, on March 16th, 1984, this man, Gary, waited at the airport for the perpetrator, Jeff, who had kidnapped his son, Jody, and then shot him dead as cameras rolled and captured it. See, this is a parent's worst nightmare, a child's abduction, or a sexual assault. And Gary's son experienced both. He was an American dad from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and he did the unthinkable. He tracked down the man who took his son and shot him in the head. And a cameraman captured the murder on tape, turning his act of revenge into a national sensation. And he even attracted more attention from the media during his trial when a judge deciding his fate essentially asked the audience in the courtroom or posed it to everyone. Should he be charged with murdering another man or celebrated for ridding the world of a dangerous criminal? Well, ask that question to yourself. When a series of events that would change Gary's life forever and his son Jody's, when his 11-year-old son was kidnapped by his karate instructor, taken across the country to a cheap motel in Anaheim, California, just a short walk away from Disneyland, and his little boy was sexually assaulted by his karate instructor. At some point in this horrific ordeal, Jody called his parents. The police traced the call, and they found his captor and arrested him, and he was put on a flight back to Louisiana, as well as Jody on a separate flight. And Jody's dad, Gary, drove to the Baton Rouge airport knowing that his son's captor and abuser was going to arrive. He entered the arrivals hall wearing a baseball cap and a pair of sunglasses, his face hidden. He walked over to a payphone, and I encourage you to look this actual video up because it's pretty fascinating. And as he made a quick call, a news crew got their cameras ready to record the caravan of cops that were escorting Jeff, the karate instructor, off the plane. When they passed by, Gary pulled a gun from his boot and shot him in the head. The bullet that went through the perpetrator's skull was caught on camera by the news crew. The officers apprehending him shouted, "Why, Gary? Why'd you do it?" "If someone did it to your kid, you'd do it too," Gary answered in tears. Here's the clip from that incredibly, shocking, kind of cool thing. Very cool, in my opinion, that was caught on camera in 1984 at the Baton Rouge airport.
As the suspect came through the airport, I readied my camera, raised it up to get a close-up shot of him. So I got a close-up shot, and as he got parallel to me, Gary Cloche shoots and kills him.
Gary, why? And to this day, it stands out in my mind, the shooter, Gary Cloche, says, "If it had been your child, you would have done the same thing too."
Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope that made you think, made you feel, inspired. Hopefully didn't trigger anything terrible in you, because it's a really rough one to hear about a child being harmed, a child being taken, But I really loved the mother's fight. Miriam Rodriguez, may she rest in peace, and Karen, rest in peace. And I also like the story a lot of the dad that took matters into his own hands, but that's just my opinion. All right, peace out. Love you guys. Next week. Bye.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.